You may know that Illinois has a state song, a state flower, or even that we were the 21st state to join the Union. The fact that, as you can tell, gave it our show its name. But did you know that Illinois also has a state fossil and a state soil? And now there's an official state microbe. Last week, Governor Pritzker signed a law declaring Penicillium rubens as the official state microbe. It's a mold used in the production of penicillin, the most widely used antibiotic in the world. Illinois is one of the few states that has designated a microscopic organism as its own, and that's because Peoria played a crucial role in the mass production of penicillin during World War II. And there's another interesting angle to this story, involving the way history is written and who gets credit for breakthroughs. The traditional way to tell the story of penicillin goes something like this from a 1955 newsreel.
Sir Alexander Fleming, the man who gave penicillin to the world, has passed away at the age of 73. During a lifetime devoted to medicine, he received great honors, including a knighthood and the Nobel Prize. But the only reward he ever sought was the knowledge that he had given good service to his fellow men. The millions throughout the world whose lives have been saved by his great discovery will mourn his passing. The benefit he has conferred upon humanity is incalculable.
More recently, people who have worked to democratize history, going beyond the great men who got the glory. This video is from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It went on YouTube in 2017.
As Europe and the Pacific burned during the dawn of World War II, the ARS lab in central Illinois had nearly everything it needed to begin mass penicillin production. Everything, that is, except for the right fungus strain. The final piece of the puzzle arrived unexpectedly on a piece of aging fruit.
In the summer of 1943, an unidentified housewife came to the front door and said, "Here, I've got a moldy cantaloupe. Will this be useful?" And it turned out that it had the strain for penicillin production.
An unidentified housewife. As we'll hear, that is a pallid description of a woman who's become known as Moldy Mary. To talk more about all this, we're joined now by researched chemist Neil Price. He works at the National Center for Agricultural Utilization Research, the NCAUR in Peoria, and he helped advocate for the state microbe designation. Neil, welcome to the 21st.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Thank you for coming on. We're also joined by Chris Ferris. He's an archivist at the Peoria Public Library, and he's worked to clarify Moldy Mary's role in the mass production of penicillin. Chris, thank you for being here as well.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
And we're also joined by Pat Dowd. He's a scientist and archivist also at the NCAUR in Peoria. Pat, thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you for having me.
So, Neil, I'm going to begin with you. Why did you want Illinois to have an official state microbe?
I became interested in this a couple or 3 years ago, and I realized that the strain which is used to make penicillin commercially was actually developed here in Peoria, Illinois. And I really didn't think that Peoria got enough credit for this. I don't think enough people actually knew that. You know, I think a lot of people knew about Alexander Fleming and discovering the strain in London in England, but the working strain, the actual commercial strain that's used, still used actually today, was actually from here in Peoria. And not enough people seem to know about that. So I approached David Kaler, Senator David Kaler, and I said, you know, maybe we should try to get this to be the state microbe. You know, we have a state bird, and you know, that way the state would get credit for this mold strain that saved millions of lives. And that's how the story kind of started. That's how we got started on the actual state microbe aspect anyhow.
Can you clarify that? So if I am prescribed penicillin today and I take a pill for penicillin, is that a direct descendant of the mold on the cantaloupe or whatever it was in 1940, whatever, that was used to ramp up production?
Right. So the history is that Alexander Fleming identified a strain that made penicillin at St. Mary's Hospital in London. And that strain was brought to the United States, brought to Peoria in 1941 by Howard Florey, and Heatley as well. And so that strain, they could not make enough penicillin using that strain. That was essentially the problem. The first person they tested, they actually used half of the world's supply of penicillin on just the first person they tested, the penicillin on, they treated with penicillin. So they screened for new strains here, and they found a new strain, the NRRL 1951 strain. And there are a couple of things, three things about this actually that were important. First of all, it made a lot more penicillin, made about eight times more penicillin. The other thing was that it made a different type of penicillin, right? So the original penicillin F from the Fleming strain was not very stable, chemically unstable, would break down very quickly, you couldn't store it. The new strain produced something called penicillin G. And penicillin G is still the most important penicillin, the most important antibiotic in use today. So that strain is still used, and that strain is the penicillin from that strain is still made commercially and used in augmentin and such drugs as that, such antibiotics as that. So yeah, it's still extremely important. The third one was that you could not produce enough of it because it could not be grown in deep liquid cultures. So they were not able to grow the original Fleming strain in liquid cultures. By the new strain, they could grow it in large tanks, and they could produce gallons and gallons of that. And of course, from that, they made essentially tons of the actual penicillin.
Okay. Which was then used to treat. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're going to need to take a break here, and we're going to get more into the history and the processes of penicillin and Central Illinois' role in that, and Moldy Mary, this figure from history whose role has been characterized in different ways. I'll leave it at that for now. We're going to continue this conversation here on the 21st after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the newly designated Illinois state microbe, which is Penicillium rubens, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. One of our guests can correct me on that. If not, it joins a long list of official state designated things, including snack food, state song, state flower, state soil, the drummer silty clay loam. That's one of my favorites, but I digress. We're speaking about this with research chemist Neil Price, who works at the National Center for Agricultural Utilization Research, the NCAUR, in Peoria. He helped advocate for this designation of a state microbe because of Peoria and its significance in the mass production of penicillin, as we've been hearing. We're also joined by Pat Dowd, who's a scientist and archivist at the NCAUR in Peoria, and also Chris Ferris, an archivist at the Peoria Public Library, who's worked to clarify the role of a woman who is known popularly as Moldy Mary in the mass production of penicillin. Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. If you have a question for our guests or just a comment about Moldy Mary, about penicillin, about women in science in general, 800-222-9455 is our number. So, Chris, you have researched Mary Hunt is one of the names she's had been known by in history. Moldy Mary, as I mentioned, what was her role at the lab? Who was she?
From my research, I've been able to determine that she worked there at least for 1 year. And the guys at the lab have records, some records on her work there. But from my research, I determined that she considered herself a bacteriologist. That's how she listed herself in the Peoria City Directory. Now, there is some question as to whether or not she deserved that title. That's one of the many questions about Mary Hunt and her past, and then her life after she left the lab, which was probably sometime 43, 44. And I have a lot to add, but I don't want to keep going here. So do you have any specific questions?
No, that's good. Yeah. And let me bring Pat into the conversation now. You're an archivist at the lab. Do you have anything you want to add to that about her role and the backstory there?
Well, I think there's no question that she was involved in the work here and made significant contributions. You know, the thing that always comes up is who found the cantaloupe with the most productive strain on it. And she's one candidate. There's some inconsistencies in her story, as Chris mentioned. And then there's another person that we found in some of our documents related to penicillin, whose name was Mary Lou Finley Roberson, which I know Chris has done a lot of hunting and we've done some hunting. We haven't found really any more information on her. So if any of the listeners do have any information, that would be greatly appreciated. And as well, as you heard in the video from the ARS, one other story is that it was an unknown housewife that brought the cantaloupe in. So it's things we're trying to find out, and we looked through some notebooks. I want to mention, by the way, that one of the original notebooks from that period where the studies were done is now on display at the Peoria Riverfront Museum, and there's also, for those interested in the penicillin history, a permanent display at the Wheels of Time Museum located just north of Peoria.
Okay, so we will have on our website a picture of somebody who may have been the Moldy Mary finding this cantaloupe we've been discussing at a Peoria market. This originally appeared in Life magazine. You can see that at 21stshow.org. I understand it's also on the side of a building in Peoria, a giant mural of this moment that may have happened in history. But maybe, Chris, can you just tell us a little bit more about this melon and its possible role in history, depending on, or I guess, what, you know, is it clear there was a melon, or is it just a question of who brought the melon to the lab? What is the story there?
I believe that both Pat and I would concur that the strain that was used as the candidate we've been discussing most likely came from a cantaloupe. And as to the source of that, that is somewhat in doubt. However, I do have a story that was written in 1996 by a gentleman who name is Milton Scoteris, and he said that his father would always share a story around the dinner table on Sunday about a woman who would come in during the war to his market, which was on Main Street in Peoria, and shop for moldy fruit, and asked him to set that aside, as a matter of fact, and she would collect it every week, and then one point he said that Dad said to him that she said she didn't need it any longer. Well, years went by after that, and she came back to him and said to him, his name was John, now I can tell you that the cantaloupe that I found at your market was crucial in the development of penicillin. I couldn't say anything during the war years because of the secrecy of what we were doing. So that story at least confirms what Mary thought she was doing. I believe what Mary believed that she did, Mary Hunt, and that she was the person who found the cantaloupe that was used in the mass production of penicillin. Now, whether or not that is accurate or not, I can't say 100%.
Neil, I wonder, as a chemist, if you can help us understand, and maybe, you know, how I say this sometimes to scientists, like I'm a smart teenager, can you explain to me how, you know, that moldy cantaloupe relates to the penicillin that people might take today to fight off an infection?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the penicillin is really, it's a natural product made by the mold. And it's similar to the way that it's, you know, fermentation of wine or beer, fermentation of the penicillin penicillium strain of the mold gives penicillin. And then this material can be isolated from these cultures. And that's essentially what's used directly in medicine, or it can be modified and changed. There are several hundred different penicillins on the market now. So essentially that was the, you know, the reason for doing this. But back in the 1940s, just to kind of take on what Chris was saying, remember this was World War II, so a lot of what they were doing at that stage, they couldn't immediately report, and they couldn't say what they were actually doing, until the papers came out really at the end of the war, and that was after Fleming and Florey won the Nobel Prize. So they were under, you know, a kind of a blanket of secrecy, I think, at that time as well. They were trying to get new antibiotics to deal with military problems, you know, aspects during World War II.
Pat, I wonder, I think as we look back on this, you know, in history, the lens of the present is that, you know, a lot of women's contributions in science have been minimized over the years, right? There's been The Hidden Figures was a book and a movie, and Henrietta Lacks, you know, there's a book about her as well. I wonder if you have a sense of whether, you know, this, I presume that as many institutions were back in the 1940s and 50s, that this was a male-dominated lab. Do you have any sense of whether her contributions might have been minimized by her colleagues back then?
Well, I think in her case, her perception is that there was actually a lot of people looking around for, you know, the good strains, and, you know, several of the lab workers, several of the scientists. So you could look at it from that perspective, that maybe she just got lucky and happened to be the one that found it. But I do want to mention that one of the scientists that was here at the lab, that was a woman, Dorothy Fennell, made significant contributions as a microbiologist. And actually in this notebook I was telling you about, she's the one that did the experiment that showed that the strain that was ultimately the parent of the commercial strain was the superior producer of penicillin in the submerged culture. So that's, you know, a pretty tremendously significant contribution.
Chris, I wonder if you have a perspective on that idea that, you know, Moldy Mary, you note in your article for Peoria Magazine, which came out, I believe, a couple of years ago at this point, that, you know, there was one person in particular who had seemed to give her credit in the earlier, you know, in the 50s and 60s, but then in the 70s and 80s was sort of downplaying her as a quote, simple messenger girl.
Well, to that point, there was a paper written in 1944 by Kenneth Raper, Dorothy Alexander, and Robert Coghill, who would have been supervisors over this at the Ag Lab. And at the end of the paper, they singled out a couple of individuals for acknowledgement, one of those being Mary Hunt. And it reads, I'll read it here for you. "We are likewise indebted to Miss Mary K. Hunt for collecting samples of moldy materials and for assisting in the isolation and preliminary testing of many strains." So without a doubt, at that time, they believed she had contributed something significantly. However, as you said, over the years, especially Dr. Coghill diminished her role, and even angrily so in some interviews that I read, was even angry that her name was brought up. So there's something that happened between the 1940s and the 1970s. Even in the 1960s, he said he couldn't remember her name, but he knew that she had found the melon. And then that changed from the 70s to the 80s. So I'm not sure what it was that happened. I have some thoughts on that that I don't know if you have time for me to speculate on, and I will if so.
Sure, please go ahead.
So I tried to get as much detail about Mary K. Hunt as I could, later Mary Stevens. And I believe that she probably had training in this area. She had claimed that she had a degree from the University of Chicago and had studied at the University of Illinois School of Medicine. I was never able to corroborate that, but I did find a mention in a census of a person with her name. I can't say for a fact that it's her, that was attending nursing school in 1930 in the Chicago area. So was that her? I'm not sure, but she also mentioned in some of the articles that were written about her that she had background in nursing. I think it's somewhat likely she might have exaggerated her resume to get the position at the lab, and that might have been discovered and therefore led to a falling out, and the lab employees at the time wanting to disconnect her from this find. That's again, I can't verify that, but that's what I suspect.
No, this is interesting, though. I mean, history is complicated. History can be messy sometimes. You just don't have the primary source documents to back up the stories that you know people think they can tell. So that's okay. We like complexity here on the 21st. I also just want to briefly mention, you know, Governor Pritzker, when he signed this legislation last week, he had said, you know, the truth about Moldy Mary has been lost in the story. I also want to mention that our producer, Anna Casey, who worked on this segment, reached out to a number of women scientists and organizations of women scientists, and no one could make it onto the program on our deadline. Neil, I guess we're almost out of time on this conversation. I want to ask, do you see parallels between the sort of, the mass production of penicillin that happened back in World War II and what's going on now with the COVID-19 vaccine? You know, do you think that's part of the reason that this Peoria history has been resurfacing recently, perhaps?
It may be that. I think that when we were talking about this was actually before, when we started talking about it was before COVID-19. I mean, I just looking back at the history, I want to say that at the lab, we've got a really wonderful photograph that was taken in 1944. It actually has Sir Alexander Fleming on the front entrance way to the USDA lab in Peoria. So Fleming actually was here in 1944. We only found this out very recently. He's surrounded by about 40 scientists or so, USDA scientists at the time. And of those, I'd say about 15 of them are actually women scientists. So this was 1944. So 15 women scientists out of a group of maybe 40 people there at the time is pretty significant, I think. It was World War II, so it may be that some of the young men may have been away in Europe, but I think it's still significant, the role that was played by women scientists in the development of, what is essentially the most important drug that's ever been discovered.
I think that's a great point at which to end our conversation. Neil Price is a research chemist at the National Center for Agricultural Utilization Research in Peoria. Pat Dowd is also a scientist and archivist there. And Chris Ferris is an archivist at the Peoria Public Library who has worked on clarifying Moldy Mary's role in the mass production of penicillin. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st. And that is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you again tomorrow.